If you have your Bibles, I'd like for you to turn to Romans chapter 12. I was visiting with one of our church members yesterday, and he said he was excited about the fact that a friend of his was coming to Emmanuel, and he was hearing the messages out of Romans. And in fact, he had talked to his friend about the messages, and they both agreed that they were very practical in nature and that we had gotten through the difficult part of Romans. And I know exactly what our church member meant. Romans 1 through 11 is difficult to understand for many because it is doctrinal in nature. Beginning with Romans 12, going through Romans 16, we have some very easy to understand practical exhortations from the Apostle Paul. In fact, they are commandments given to us by God. But I want you to be very clear about something. The reason Romans has 11 chapters of doctrine and only 4 or 5 chapters of commandments on how we are to live is because doctrine is much more important than one's duty. In other words, what you believe is considered by God to be far more important than how you behave. Now that may strike you as odd, because if you hear modern preaching, most preachers tell you what's more important is how you behave rather than what you believe. But the Bible, it's just the reverse. And the reason is simply this. One's inward belief is the fuel that drives the engine of outward obedience. In other words, if you're a little out of kilter in what you believe, you're going to be out of kilter in how you behave. But when you understand the grace of God as outlined in Romans 1 through 11, and you believe it, and you know it, and you rest in it, then when you come to the commandments, which begin in Romans 12 and go through Romans 16, you do not obey what God says for His benefit. You obey for your benefit. Well, now, I hope you understand what I just said. We're about to read one of the first commandments found in the book of Romans. And if you don't inwardly believe the doctrine of grace, which we've examined for the last 2.5 years, you will see this commandment as your duty, and you will seek to obey in order to be pleasing to God. And it'll mess you up. Because you will wonder if you've really fully obeyed, if you're deeply committed enough, if you're doing what God says the way it ought to be done, and you will be so introspective that you will lose sight of the fact that you are already pleasing to God because of His choice to grace you. And when He gives you a commandment, it is not for His benefit, it's for yours. So that my prayer is that this morning you will see this first commandment and the commandments to follow as packaged blessings. You want your life to be rewarding and satisfying and fulfilling? Listen to what we read this morning. Apply it to your life. Obey it and be blessed. But please take it out of the context of you doing this in order to be satisfying to God. You already are because of His grace. So let's stand and read this first commandment, Romans 12, verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation. I'm reading from the King James. The word dissimulation means hypocrisy. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. These two verses relate to how we are to love people we're in relationship with. If you want your life and your relationships to be blessed, follow this commandment. Thank you. You may be seated. what does it mean to love without hypocrisy? I guess we first ought to consider a definition for love. In our culture, people think love is a feeling, but in the Bible, love is an active verb. In fact, if you were to reach for a definition of love, you could reach no further than 1 Corinthians 13 and find a satisfying answer. Love is patient. It is kind. Love does not envy. Love is not self-seeking or easily angered and keeps no record of wrongs. Love protects, trusts, hopes, perseveres, and never fails. Love is an active verb. Now the Apostle Paul says, love without hypocrisy. What does he mean? First, you are to show this kind of love in your actions and say it in your words. Contrary to some who just say it with their words and do not show it with their actions. John Calvin said this, people often profess their love, even to those whom they not only treat with neglect, but in reality renounce and despise. People who do that are loving with hypocrisy. They tell you that they love you, but then they turn around and are impatient about you, unkind toward you, tell things regarding you, and keep a record of your wrongs. Don't trust you, are not patient with you, though they say they love you. Christians often are horrible at this. Love is part of our lingo, so we'll go and say, I love you, brother. I love you. You know that, don't you? I really love you. And then we proceed to tear down and to destroy. That is loving with hypocrisy. That is not love, as the Bible calls for us to love people. Now, what is the best way for this love without hypocrisy to be seen? Well, showing this love is best seen through the covering of another's sins. In fact, if you want to know whether or not you're loving without hypocrisy, ask yourself the question if you can look past a person's faults. Listen to what Peter said about this. 1 Peter 4, verse 8. Above all things, have fervent love among yourselves, for love covers the multitude of sins. Now notice this verse and the last phrase. Love covers the multitude of sins. It doesn't say it covers a multitude of sins, but the multitude of sins. What does this mean? Well, the person you're in relationship with, think about their sins. Lump them all together into one big pile. You have the multitude of sins. Love covers them. In other words, a person who loves without hypocrisy is not trying to fix the people they love. They accept the people they love the way they are. You say, now wait a minute, Pastor. Isn't it our job to correct people? Isn't it our job to discipline people? Isn't it our job to make sure that people recover from their wrongs and do right? Well, it's my job. I mean, I'm shepherd. I'm pastor of a flock. I'm involved in the business of helping people overcome their sins. But listen to me carefully. You talk to anybody that I've worked with over the last decade, and you ask them if Wade loves them. And to a person, I believe every one of them will say yes. And you ask them if I'm trying to fix them, and I believe every one of them to a person will say no. And you ask them if I accept them, and every one to a person will say yes. For you see, love without hypocrisy takes the multitude of sins and covers it. When I help people, I am not helping them in order to fix them or in order for them to make me feel good about myself. I'm helping people for their own sake. And whether or not they change is their business and God's, not mine. Now, this is how you show love without hypocrisy. You accept people the way they are. Now, how in the world can this be done? This is a commandment. Love without hypocrisy. Don't just say it, show it. Show it in kindness and patience. Do not keep a record of wrongs. This is God's kind of love. This is agape love. How can that happen? Showing this love is fueled by God's forgiveness of your own sins. You will never be driven to obey this commandment until you have the internal fuel of understanding God's forgiveness of your own sins. This is why Paul spends so much time in Romans 1 through 11 teaching us about justification and forgiveness and the imputed righteousness of Christ and the grace of God. Because you can never love a person and cover the multitude of sins in that person until you recognize that the multitude of your own sins are also covered by God. Ephesians 4, verse 32 teaches us this. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. If you find it difficult to forgive people for their sin, it is a sign that internally you have found it difficult to believe God has forgiven you of your sin. But a grace-filled person is able to live a graceful relationship and show love without hypocrisy. Number two, not only are we to show this kind of love in our actions and say it in our words, to love without hypocrisy means that we hate that which is destructive and cling to that which edifies. This is found in the second portion of verse 9. Remember, the text drives the message. The text says, abhor that which is evil, cleave or cling to that which is good. Now, last Tuesday morning in our men's discipleship group, I believe we made a mistake. We took this section of verse 9 out of its context, and we began to discuss what it means to abhor that which is evil. And we got off chasing a rabbit of trying to identify that which is evil, because it changes from church to church. Some churches will tell you going to movies is evil. Some churches will tell you how you dress is evil. Some churches will tell you if you have long hair, if you're a man, that's evil. Or short hair, if you're a woman, that's evil. And so on. The rules change from church to church to church. And we got into this discussion of what is evil as far as an abstract thought is concerned. We were wrong. Because we ought not take this verse out of its context. This verse is not speaking of general principles of evil or even general principles of good. It's given to us in the context of loving people. And when Paul says, abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good, it is a parallel thought to what he said in 1 Corinthians 13 when he described love, God's kind of love, and said this, love thinks no evil. In other words, to love without hypocrisy means that I filter all I do and all I say for those I love through the lens of, will this build up the person I am loving? Or will it destroy and tear down? I will abhor that which is destructive, and I will cling to that which is good. Love without hypocrisy builds up the people that are being loved. Some illustrations of this, I think, are common everyday things that occur. Many of you know, I've shared with you before, I do not like pumpkin pie. I don't know why, I just don't like it. It's something in my genes. And my wife loves it. She loves pumpkin pie, and her family loves it. And every time we go to Thanksgiving, Grandma always makes 3 dozen pumpkin pies. Now, when I'm served pumpkin pie, and you know, I don't want to be rude, and so I will eat the pumpkin pie, and it's not an enjoyable experience at all. But Grandma invariably will say, "How is the pumpkin pie?" Now, when Paul says love without hypocrisy, this doesn't mean you tell the blunt truth to Grandma. It means that you weigh what you say, and whatever you say for the purpose of building up Grandma. And the guys came to the conclusion that what you say would be something like this. Grandma, that's the greatest pumpkin pie I've eaten this year. You don't have to tell her it's the only pumpkin pie that you've eaten this year. I mean, something that is building up. Because truthfully, it probably is the greatest pumpkin pie. You just don't like it. But what you're doing is you're guarding against words that destroy. Now, that's a common example. But one of the guys brought up on Tuesday morning, what if your wife comes into the room and says, "Honey, does this outfit make me look fat?" How do you love without hypocrisy? Now, don't groan. I told the early service what I'm about to say, and they all groaned. The guys came to the conclusion, and what you say is, "Honey, what difference does it make? You're beautiful to me whether you're skinny or fat." I told you not to groan. I got hammered over this in Sunday school. Mona Lowen told me, "Wade Burleson, if your wife asks you that, you say, 'No, it doesn't make you look fat.'" Of course, I'm married to a skinny mini anyway, but my point is this. My point is this. Whatever you say, whatever you do, you say what you say for the purpose of building up the person you love. Now listen to me. If you are loving with hypocrisy, the words that you speak to the person you love tear down, destroy. And I have to say to you that if you are not guarding your mind and guarding your lips regarding the words you speak to the one you love, if you are not abhorring that which is destructive and cleaving to that which is good, it shows a problem in your relationship with Christ, not the person you're loving. And the problem very well could be is you have a very faulty understanding of what God has done for you, or what God is doing for you. That's why if a couple is struggling, and the words that is proceeding from the mouth of the husband toward the wife is destructive and unkind and hateful and bitter and tearing down, or vice versa, the wife speaking destructive, tearing down words to the husband, and they come for counseling or they come for help, who's the person that needs the help? It's not the person that is the recipient of those unkind words. Even though the husband wants his wife to change and says to the pastor, "Oh, help me. She needs to change, and how she does this and how she does that," I say, "Stop! You're loving with hypocrisy." To love without hypocrisy means you take the multitude of sins and you cover them. And you abhor that which is evil and what is said. And you cleave to that which is good. Number 3. To love without hypocrisy means you show it in your actions and say it in your words. You hate that which is destructive and cling to that which edifies. And it also means you display your love for Christ through your love for His children. This is the next verse, verse 10. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. All Christians are brothers. We are born of God. He is our Father. To love Him is to love His children. This is what John meant in 1 John 5, verse 1, where he says, "Whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. And everyone that loveth Him that begat, loveth Him also that is begotten of Him." Do you know what John is saying? If you know Christ, you've been born of God from above. He's given you birth. And if you know Christ and have been born of Him, then you will love Him that beget you, God the Father, and everyone else that He's begotten. All of His other kids. That's the sign that you know Christ. There is no greater incentive to love anybody, whether it's your husband or your wife or your kids or your churchmate or your schoolmate or your workmate, no greater incentive to love them than the fact that they're God's kids. Now, there may be some that you're in relationship with that don't know Christ, and the love of God may not be upon them. And there are times when, obviously, there is a righteous anger, and there are times when judgment and condemnation do come from the Lord upon those whom He has not set His affection. But the fact is that if you are in relationship with anyone who names the name of Christ, there is no greater incentive to love them than to know that God gave them birth. Husbands, I don't care what your wife has done. When you don't love your wife who names the name of Christ, you are hating a child of God. And that says a lot about what you think of God. Finally, not only do we see in this text that we are to show this kind of love in our actions and in our words, not only are we to hate that which is destructive and cling to that which edifies, and not only are we to display our love for Christ through our love for His kids, I want you to see that in this text we are told that to love without hypocrisy means that we are to lead out in deference to the ones that we love, seeing them as better. It's found there in verse 10. "Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another." The word "prefer" in this verse literally means to lead out or to set the example. When I am loving my wife, I am leading out. I am setting the example. I'm not waiting on her to do this, but I'm leading out and setting the example by showing preferences to her tastes, her desires, her wishes, her concerns. It doesn't mean you always agree, but in honor of the one you love, you value the ideas and wisdom that your spouse gives. This is done only when you esteem the other as better than yourself. This is the difference between a cursed, filled relationship and a grace-full relationship. For instance, in a cursed relationship, as described in Genesis chapter 3, you have the man and the woman, or the church and the pastor, or the worker and the employer, fighting, setting the example of trying to be above the other and to push the other down. It's the little phrase in Genesis where God said, "And her desire shall be for her husband." Everybody thinks, "Oh, that's such a beautiful thing." In the original, what it meant was her desire was to be the head of her husband. And so what you've got is you've got people trying to be the head, to set the example, to squash everybody else. In a grace-full relationship, people lead out, set the example of coming under everybody else and seeing the other person's desires and preferences and wishes and concerns as best. That's what it means to love without hypocrisy. And you know, this is, it's so practical. Honey, where would you like to eat today? Oh, sweetheart, it doesn't matter. Well, what would you like to eat? Oh, no, really, you choose today. Oh, no, sweetheart, really, I want you. It's your special that you choose. I mean, can you imagine if we just operated like that? I propose to you that the only way you can do that is when internally your gasoline tank of spirituality has been filled by an understanding of how much God loves you and what God has done for you and the multitude of sins that God has covered and how He accepts you because He's justified you through His Son. And it's all about His work and not your performance. All right. Knowing that, now let your love be without hypocrisy. Don't just say it, show it. And when you show it, make sure that what you say and do, guard everything. Make sure that it builds up and doesn't tear down. If you need greater incentive for loving people, go no further than knowing that God gave them birth and they're His kids. And lead out in deference to the ones you love, seeing them as better. I say to you, if there's not an internal drive within you to obey this commandment, it's a sign that something's out of kilter in your understanding of your relationship with Christ. Because these commandments don't affect God, but I guarantee you, they affect how your life is lived and the joy of living it.